possible life terms. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
And now, VOA's International Edition. Coming up, the latest on the Sony cyber attack, airstrikes, warning to Hamas, plus a big vote in Tunisia. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. President Obama Sunday spoke during an interview on CNN's State of the Union program about the cyber attack on Sony Corporation. He was asked if the attack was an act of war.
No, I don't think it was an act of war. I think it was an act of cyber vandalism that was very costly, very expensive. We take it very seriously. We will respond proportionally, as I said. But, you know, we're going to be in an environment in this new world where so much is digitalized that both state and non-state actors are going to have the capacity to disrupt our lives in all sorts of ways. We have to do a much better job of guarding against that.
Mr. Obama said his advisors are weighing how to respond in kind to that attack, which prompted the Hollywood studio, owned by a Japanese firm, to withdraw a comedy titled The Interview, prepared for release to movie theaters during the holiday season. North Korea has denied responsibility for the attack on Sony. The film depicts the fictional assassination of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. CEO of Sony, Michael Lynton, said Sony had no choice but to cancel the film's release because major theater chains refused to show it. Some have criticized Sony for canceling the film's distribution, saying it's not right to let another country's actions hold an American filmmaker hostage, so to speak. President Obama says he will do everything he can to close the U.S. military prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Saturday, the Defense Department said it had sent home some four Afghan detainees held in detention at Guantanamo. U.S. officials said the men had been long cleared for release and were sent as a mark of confidence in the government of the new Afghan president, Ashraf Ghani. Iraqi leader and the Kurdish leader, Masoud Barzani, has visited Mount Sinjar after Kurdish fighters broke a siege in the area by Islamic State fighters. President of Iraq's semi-autonomous Kurdish region, Barzani, says the fighters have taken control of all roads leading to the mountain and have liberated the area where thousands of persecuted Yazidis were trapped. He added that Kurdish forces will not allow any Islamic State fighters to remain in areas that the fighters can reach. Tensions are rising on the Israeli border with the Hamas-ruled Gaza Strip. Robert Berger reporting from the VOA Bureau in Jerusalem.
Israel says its first airstrike on Gaza since the 50-day war months ago is a warning to the Islamic militant group Hamas after Palestinians fired a rocket across the border. The rocket did not cause any injuries or damage, and it may have been fired by a renegade group. But Israeli Defense Minister Moshe Yaalon says Hamas rules Gaza and therefore it is responsible. Yaalon warned Hamas firing even one rocket at Israel will not be tolerated. Hamas is defiant, even though it took a severe beating during the seven-week war. More than 2,000 Palestinians in Gaza were killed, and more than 10,000 homes were destroyed. Describing the Israeli airstrike as a dangerous escalation, Hamas threatened to retaliate. The group's spokesman, Sami Abu Zuhri, warned Israel against further airstrikes and called for the international community to restrain Israel. The tit-for-tat attacks and intensifying rhetoric have raised fears of a new round of conflict. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Tunisians voted Sunday in a runoff presidential election seen as a landmark in the country's move to democracy. Preliminary results have not been released, but candidate Beji Caid Essebsi, his anti-Islamic party, quickly claimed victory over his rival, interim president Moncef Marzouki. Essebsi's campaign manager said initial indications showed a victory for the 88-year-old former minister, but Marzouki's campaign manager dismissed the claim, saying the election is too close to call. Sunday's vote represents the final stage in the country's transition since the so-called Arab Spring Revolution overthrew long-ruling President Zine El Abidine Ben Ali in 2011. We got more now on the election from Lisa Bryant.
The campaign has been marked by negative campaigning. Mr. Marzouki has accused Mr. Essebsi of wanting to restore the old guard ousted in the revolution. For his part, Mr. Essebsi has described Mr. Marzouki as an extremist, whose three-year tenure as president has been disastrous. Mr. Essebsi refused to hold a debate with Mr. Marzouki ahead of the runoff. If Mr. Essebsi wins the presidency, his party will control all key parts of Tunisia's government. But El Nahda and the Islamists still remain a powerful political force.
Donc nous allons vers un gouvernement pluriel. Alors nous avons déjà.
In an interview with France 24 News Channel ahead of the elections, Mr. Essebsi said Nida Tounes will be seeking coalitions with like-minded parties to reach a majority in parliament. Under Tunisia's new constitution, the president has a limited role, responsible for security, defense, and foreign affairs. The parliament will determine the key choice of the country's next prime minister. For many Tunisians, the elections are about bread and butter issues. In the capital, Tunis, one voter, Siham, said she hoped the country's next president will support the youth, fight unemployment, and restore security. The revolution has upended Tunisia's economy and shattered a once stable police state. Tourism and foreign investment have plummeted. Joblessness has soared. So has insecurity, with the country now grappling with militant Islam. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
President Obama has condemned the shooting Saturday of two New York City police officers at point-blank range. The president repeated his call to the American people to reject violence and turn words that hurt into words that heal. The two police officers were sitting in their police car when a 28-year-old man walked up to them, opened fire. Shooter ran into a subway station where he killed himself. The shooter had posted an Instagram message indicating he would kill policemen in return for the deaths of two African-American men at the hands of police in New York and the state of Missouri. And a 22-year-old South African medical student has won the 64th annual Miss World Beauty pageant. Rolene Strauss was crowned at the pageant Sunday in London. And that's a look at the news.
This is Business News on VOA Global with Ira Melman. I'm Jim Stevenson. Stocks are poised to climb higher in the traditionally low-volume Christmas foreshortened trading week, following last week's big boost from the Federal Reserve. Last week, stocks had their best 2 days in a row in years. The Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500 Index both closed the week up more than 3%. The NASDAQ Composite Index rose 2.4%. Market Watch reports that based on the tendency of strong Decembers to continue into January, coupled with the low trading volumes that tend to cap the year, and stocks may very well end the year at record highs.
Staples provided it on Friday an update to the findings of its investigation into the data security incident that allowed access to customer payment information for about a month through the middle of September. The office supply retailer said malware was deployed to some point-of-sale systems at 115 of its more than 1,400 U.S. stores, affecting about 1.16 million payment cards. From August 10th through September 16th, the malware allowed access to cardholder names, payment card numbers, expiration dates, and card verification codes at 113 of the stores. Staples stock slipped 0.6% in after-hours trading.
It appears more Americans will have the opportunity to visit Cuba as a result of the newly announced trade and political agreement between the United States and the island nation. While the agreement stops short of permitting travel strictly for tourism purposes, that means no actual beach vacations, it does allow for a range of other reasons, including family visits. Travel professionals are hopeful, however, that the agreement is setting the stage for an era for full and free access to Cuba, especially given that today's news included word that the United States will reopen its embassy in Cuba. That's a look at business news on VOA Global.
Would you want to go to Cuba on a vacation?
I might like to see it. I've flown over it, but I've never been there, obviously.
Yeah, well, you know, the U.S. cruise industry is going crazy. Just a couple of days since all this has been announced. It's only 99 miles off the coast of the United States. Mm-hmm. It's got gorgeous beaches. They need a few hotels.
And some really neat old cars, too.
Well, stay with us here on VOA Global. That is continuing discussion as we continue. I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Recent confrontations between some white police officers and African Americans have sparked debate about racial divisions in America and the sometimes hostile relationship between police and some communities. Many police departments, including the one in racially diverse Long Beach, California, are using a technique called community policing to fight both crime and improve relations. Elizabeth Lee has the story from Long Beach.
Through the years, the city of Long Beach has struggled with gang violence, poverty, and racial tensions among residents and with police. 22-year-old resident Jacob Sariana says he has experienced it firsthand.
They always try to mess with me, like, and they ask, what's the reason for you pulling me over? Oh, because you fit the description. Really? Really, yeah. I guess I'm always fitting the description then, because I'm always getting pulled over.
Last year, the city saw its lowest violent crime rate in more than 40 years. So far this year, the numbers are even lower. Don Rodriguez works with young people in the city and says officers are more involved with the community than ever before.
Now what we're seeing is we're seeing more community people involved in the policing, working with the police getting a better feel of the community.
Long Beach Police Chief Jim McDonald says,
we build a team. And when you have a team, when a crisis comes up, you're not dealing with it by yourself. And too often when we see things get volatile across America, and whether it's a racial issue or another similar type of issue, it's often because there aren't those pre-existing relationships in place.
Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Long Beach.
Boxing legend Muhammad Ali has been hospitalized with a mild case of pneumonia. Ali's spokesman says the illness was caught early and Ali is expected to make a full recovery. Recently, VOA's Penelope Pulo was here in the cafe with a look at the documentary, I Am Ali. Here is an encore presentation.
My father has a lot of sides, and you hear about the fights. You don't hear about family that much and what that meant to him.
What's your dad's name?
Muhammad Ali.
No one, not even some members of his family, knew of the existence of these audio tapes until recently. They thread the narrative of the boxing champion's life in Claire Lewis's documentary. Ali's daughter, Hannah, offered the tapes to Lewis.
My father was always conscious about history. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why he made this series of audio tape cassette recordings.
Because he refused to serve in the Vietnam War, he was stripped of his championship title and his boxing license was revoked. His close friend, former football player Jim Brown, remembers.
He had a lot of courage. The risk he had to take, and then to be isolated, to have his crown taken away, not be able to make a living, that was difficult.
But he stuck to his convictions, and in 1974, at the age of 32, Ali made a comeback.
When George Foreman meets me, he'll pay his debt. I can drown a drink of water and kill a dead tree. Wait till you see Muhammad Ali.
He defeated formidable George Foreman and recaptured his title.
I get into the ring with the guy. I bluffed him. I done everything. Beat him up basically for about 5 or 6 rounds. I thought it was easy. Then about the 6th round, he whispered in my ear after I'd hit him in the side, "Is that all you got, George?" And that was about all I had.
I was the Concord of boxing. I was at a high altitude than the rest, moving fast.
As Ali has aged, we hear him begin to slur his words, a sign of developing Parkinson's disease. But to the world and his children, he remains an icon of power and grace. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Please join us every day at voanews.com and many podcast platforms.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Country music superstar Carrie Underwood is celebrating 10 years on the charts with the release of her double CD, Greatest Hits, Decade Number One. The former American Idol winner topped the Billboard country music charts with a new song from the CD, Something in the Water. The religious conversion-themed song was Underwood's second number one this year after her duet with Miranda Lambert, Something Bad. Underwood, who is expecting her first child with her husband and NHL player Mike Fisher, told the Associated Press that she knew Something in the Water was something special during the writing process.
There really was this, I don't know, just kind of magic that was happening in the room the day that we were writing it. And I feel like I get a little piece of it every time I sing it. It just makes me happy to sing. And everything, just the music, the lyrics, and the choir, and kind of everything coming together, it just allows me to be just a joyful, happy person singing a song that I love. And it's just, it's really nice for me to have that.
Carrie includes another new song, Little Toy Guns, which deals with the effects of family strife on the Greatest Hits CD. She told the AP that both songs seem to fit where her career and her life are right now.
Well, I think it's just really important when we go in to write or when I'm like listening for, you know, new stuff to put anywhere. It just kind of has to feel right. It's not like I said, okay, I have this many, you know, hits that are going to go on the album and I want something like this. It just kind of all happens, which I think is really nice and natural and organic. And, you know, Something in the Water and Little Toy Guns, which is also a new song that's going to be on the Greatest Hits album. They just worked, you know. We weren't trying to go for anything. They were just songs that we kind of wrote along the way and really loved and thought would be perfect, you know, perfect additions to the songs that we already had.
The CD features 18 of Underwood's hits, including her first chart topper, Jesus Take the Wheel, and the Girl Gets Revenge hit, Before He Cheats. The list of songs highlights Carrie's variety of both positive and poignant tunes, from See You Again, about overcoming grief and loss, to Blown Away, about a girl who escapes an abusive father by letting him die in a tornado. Underwood told the AP she's also included the work tapes of the songwriting process on the CD. Carrie says that she wanted to let her fans hear all the work that goes into the polished performances that she presents on stage.
We mess up and we have to, you know, start over, or somebody else has to jump in and start singing, because, I mean, that's the first time we've ever actually sang through, ran through the songs from top to bottom. And so there's a lot of mistakes, which I think is really cool. And I think it kind of gives my fans, the people that have been with me for this, you know, 10 years, they see, you know, the polished stuff that we, you know, work on and perfect, and that's what they see and that's what they hear. But it's really nice, I think, for them to kind of hear the how it all started.
Carrie Underwood has been nominated for 2 Grammy Awards this year for Best Country Solo Performance for Something in the Water and Best Country Duo or Group Performance for Something Bad with Miranda Lambert. So, are you a Carrie Underwood fan? Do you plan to buy or download her new CD? Let us know your opinion by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia, and you can email your questions or comments to voaasia@voanews.com. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
This is VOA Global from the Voice of America with Jim Stevens and I'm Ira Melman. Were you good in science in school?
Not too bad.
I was terrible. I was awful. And now, if I were in school now and the push for STEM students, science, technology, engineering, and math.
That probably wouldn't be your calling.
No, it would not. But apparently, all of us have a little bit of scientist in this. And that story is coming up with Rick Pantaleo in a moment.
Time for sports on VOA Global with Ira Melman. I'm Jim Stevenson. Boxing great Muhammad Ali was hospitalized with a mild case of pneumonia that was caught early, and it should result in a short hospital stay, that is, according to a spokesman. The three-time world heavyweight champion is battling Parkinson's disease, and he is being treated by his team of doctors. Currently in stable condition, according to his spokesman, he went into the hospital and has a mild case of pneumonia with a good prognosis. The 72-year-old Ali had a bout of pneumonia that was caught quickly. No other details are being released due to the Ali family's request for privacy.
72 years old. Well, in the NFL, the National Football League of the United States, wins by the Steelers, the Falcons, and the Panthers eliminated the Miami Dolphins and New Orleans Saints and set up showdowns in Pittsburgh and Atlanta next week for division titles. Wins by the Lions and Packers did the same in Green Bay, and the winner will earn a first-round playoff bye. Steelers and Packers also clinched wild card berths as a result. Chargers moved into the bottom wild card spot, but still need to beat the Chiefs next week to advance. You get writing all this down? Otherwise, the Ravens, Bills, Texans, or Chiefs will clinch, and the Bengals still likely need a win.
Well, there's been a lot of back and forth between Floyd Mayweather Jr. and Manny Pacquiao, which has been going on for what seems like an eternity. It might be drawing somewhere nearer to an actual bout. On Monday, Pacquiao answered Mayweather's challenge from last week, saying that the undefeated champion has run out of places to hide. Pacquiao seems to think the biggest challenge in fighting Mayweather will be to keep the fans' interest, although fans seem pretty interested in whatever these two happen to be doing.
The four-time World Cup winner in skiing, American Lindsey Vonn's bid for a record-equaling 62nd World Cup, will have to wait a while longer. She crashed out of Sunday's Super G race after entering a gate slightly too wide as Elizabeth Gorgel beat Olympic champion Anna Fenninger by 0.05 seconds to lead the Austrian by 1-2. Although Vonn did no damage to her troublesome right knee after only starting to race again recently following two operations, she did land heavily on her right elbow.
We're crashing out of sports. Thanks for joining us.
This is Science World Express. I am Rick Pantaleo. Those of us who are non-scientists can at times feel a bit intimidated or shy while talking about science-oriented subjects with scientists. But Dr. Chad Orzel, a college professor and author of the new book, Eureka, Discovering Your Inner Scientist, says that we all use the same scientific processes that have also led to some of the world's most significant discoveries. Dr. Orzel, why did you write this book?
This book comes about because of a conversation killer. When I tell people that I'm a scientist, one of the most frequent responses is some variant of, you must be really smart. Which there's really nowhere to go with that, and it's sort of off-putting. It's a statement that people who do science are sort of different than ordinary people, that they're smart in a kind of qualitatively different fashion. You know, it's flattering to my vanity, but it's really not true, that the processes that scientists use to do science are really not that different than what anybody else does in their everyday life.
A lot of people think that science really is intimidating, and that's perhaps why people say you've got to be smart to be a scientist. So what do you tell people to reassure them that science is basically for everyone?
The idea is absolutely anything that you do has some skill and some training involved in it. The example that I use in the book is carpentry, right? If I have to, I can build something simple out of wood, but I'm not very good at it. But somebody who spends a lot of time working with wood will look at a problem and immediately see a simple and elegant way to get the effect that they want, something that I would only arrive at very laboriously and not very successfully. So there's a mental aspect to things like carpentry that I really can't do because I just don't do that very often. But nobody goes around telling someone who's a very good carpenter, well, you must be really smart. So So a lot of it comes down to it's mostly inclination and practice that, you know, I'm successful in science because I happen to enjoy doing the sort of things that make somebody a successful scientist, whereas someone who goes into woodworking happens to enjoy that considerably more than I do.
You write about the four steps that go into the process of science. Can you tell us about it?
The core of science is a process that is incredibly simple, and it's part of everything that we do. You look at the world around you and identify something that needs to be explained. You think about why the world might work the way that it does. You test your theory for how it might work by further observations and some experiments. And once you figure out what's going on, you tell everyone you know the results of that. And that look, think, test, tell process is part of any number of simple everyday activities that people do for fun and relaxation.
Is there a link between common hobbies like stamp coin, rock collecting, or even cooking?
Absolutely. If you look at maybe one of the most iconic scientists in history is Charles Darwin with the theory of evolution. If you look at why Darwin was successful with his theory and why he's remembered as the father of evolution, it comes down to the fact that he had collected an enormous amount of information about the natural world. And having all of that information enabled him to look at patterns that were there and come up with a very solid scientific theory that would pass muster with the scientific community, which other writers who predated Darwin had the basic idea that maybe living things evolve and change over time, but they didn't have the mountain of data that he brought to the table that enabled him to become the iconic scientist that he is.
Could you explain in a nutshell, perhaps, what we non-scientists discover our inner scientist?
The idea is just to recognize that this process is part of all sorts of things that you do. So if you're doing a crossword puzzle or playing a card game like bridge or playing sports like basketball or football, you're making use of the same process, this looking at the world, thinking about what's going on, testing your theories, and sharing them with other people. And that's a process that's part of all sorts of activities. And if you could be a little more consciously aware of that process, then you can use that in a more direct way to help improve your life. This process of science is something that goes as far back as we have evidence of humans. We have traces of people doing science. And that's what's ultimately made us the dominant species on the planet. That's something that, you know, we've used for millennia, and often in a sort of unconscious way. But I think taking a little more conscious control of that, making use of it, is an incredibly powerful tool for making things better.
That was Dr. Chad Orzel, a professor at Union College in Schenectady, New York, and author of the new book, Eureka, Discovering Your Inner Scientist. Thanks for listening to Science World Express. Please visit us on the Internet at voanews.com/science.
Sometimes I really wonder if we are the dominant species on the planet.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, especially with this next story.
Yeah. Coco, who's a reddish-brown pit bull with white markings, that's a dog, went missing from her Southern California home Thanksgiving, and nearly a month later she was found and reunited with the two owners, but she wasn't the same color she was when she was lost. Animal services officials in Riverside County, California, made the match when they scanned a stray black dog for an implanted microchip and found she was listed as an 8-month-old reddish-brown pit bull adopted in October from a shelter. Officials believe Coco was stolen and then died in an act. That's D-Y-E-D.
Yes,
they colored her differently. In an act of deception to make it harder for owners Christopher and Gracie and Heather Lowry to find her. And they got the dog back, and the dog is happy and healthy, apparently.
Well, this is the holiday for good eating. I mean, lots of holiday treats coming your way. And how would you like to have it all in one donut?
Donuts.
Everything stuffed into one donut. The Mirror reports from the U.K. that the savory festive treat is being dubbed the ho-ho-ho-nut, made from sage-infused dough, which is dusted with turkey salt and a roasted potato crumb, finished with cured maple candied bacon and a cranberry drizzle glaze. It wouldn't be a proper donut without a rich, gooey center. This one definitely has that. You can get it with jam or chocolate and thick gravy.
Oh, it has a gravy center. Come on, Jim. Well, that's going to wrap it up on that note. Get yourself a turkey donut, but you have to be in Great Britain. Tracy Carter is our director. Technical director is Carl Starling. Our managing director, Diane Gow. Have yourself a wonderful day. We'll talk to you tomorrow, hopefully.
All right. Maybe.